Moving to Florida and heading the St. Petersburg Chamber of Commerce. The head of the St. Pete Chamber Search Committee was a great banker and ex-Marine, Gene Oliver. He had been a former chamber chair and impressed me immensely. The past chamber pres. Paul Getting had died tragically, which brought about the opening I was about to fill. He had been very well thought of, and so there was a feeling of goodwill towards the chamber that I simply had to build upon. The chamber was, however, not in good economic shape, so my initial focus had to be on increasing membership and revenues. We bought our first home in Bardmore Estates, which was a golf and tennis community in the Largo area. Great home and neighborhood, but about a 40-minute drive to work. Later on we would correct that by finding a home on the bay in South St. Pete. St. Petersburg at the time had an outdated public perception, and we were often thought of as the city of green benches where people came to spend their final years. Downtown usually was pretty quiet after 5 p.m. even though the city had a large and spacious park area right on the waterfront. We had kinds of potential. We were ripe to emerge as the St. Pete of the future. My chamber chair was Jim Albright, who headed the major downtown hospital. When I arrived, his term was ending and my chair-elect was an attorney by the name of John Higgins, who I will discuss later on. Good man. I severed the relationship we had with the company who did our membership directory and visitor's guide, but then I hired their salesman as an independent contractor for all of our publications. His name was Mark Cornish, and the best I had ever seen. He was a tremendous self-starter. Kathy Oathout was my office manager and very capable. We were weak in membership, and I hired the membership DIR from the Clearwater Chamber, Fred Boscarina, who really proved to be a superb hire. Assembling the right staff is key to any business or organization. Our chamber business manager was a really good man but had no computer skills, so I recruited Connie Hiskey, our very close friend from Kirksville, who was currently with the University of Missouri School of Engineering's Development Department. We also had a new domed stadium sitting in St. Pete built for Major League Baseball, but housing no team. Professional hockey Tampa Bay Lightning played there and was well supported attendance-wise. Very early in my presidency I did have one minor crisis. The main entry point to the chamber, from the parking lot, behind our building, was covered every morning with pigeon dropping. After several weeks I took my trusty Daisy BB gun and stirred up the group assembled over our doorway. It made the St. Pete Times, and I readily admitted that I let my Midwest upbringing address the problem in a manner too direct. I'm sure I shook up our chamber's elected leadership, but it soon died down, and the ironic aspect to this becoming public is that I received more letters of support than I had ever received in my life, from people all over St. Pete, who were equally frustrated. In 1996 we set a national record for a chamber membership campaign for a chamber our size by bringing in 535 new members in 1 month. Fred Boscarina used the team concept to perfection. In 2 years we had grown from about 1,600 paid members to 2,575. We took all chamber publications in-house, and Mark Cornish generated far more revenues for the chamber than when it was contracted out. We were an early bird when it came to obtaining domain names, and we secured stpete.com, the ideal domain name, which soon attracted 1.5 million hits a month and became a new revenue source. This was also handled by Mark Cornish. He was housed at the chamber, paid us rent but did his own thing, and I never had to worry about his work ethic or results. One day it dawned on me that since most everyone eats lunch, why not make lunchtime work for us in the retention of our members? So I created luncheons called 11-12 at 12-11, invited 12 chamber members to join us at 12 o'clock for lunch. Initially we did 40 luncheons a year, then increased it to 60 after our huge membership drive. At first we had a pizza place provide us the pizza for their exposure, but later had Applebee's do all of our luncheons, serving their delicious chicken oriental salad and bread. Our only out-of-pocket costs were the beverages. This turned out to be the best thing we could do for member communication and retention. While the members were eating, I would give them an update on all that we were doing. When they finished eating, I went around the table and asked each member to voice their business and community concerns. I would respond as best I could, and the dynamics within the group usually led to them often doing business with each other. They left, better informed about the chamber, voiced their business and community concerns which we could address, and quite often left with them developing new business contacts. It was a great success for us, and once I shared the concept with other chambers at state and national meeting, it was copied by many other chambers. The manager of the Applebee's that catered all of our luncheons, I wrote a detailed letter to their corporate president about the great job he was doing. He later was named the manager of the year and received a nice bonus and other promotions. He was a most happy camper. I can't tell you how many longtime members of the chamber would leave our 12 at 12 telling me that they had no idea that the chamber was doing so many positive things, or that they were about to drop their membership until they came to this luncheon. Another very unique idea we created was our entrepreneurial academy, which I successfully trademarked. Seeing the huge failure rates of new businesses, 4 of 5 fail within 5 years, I was determined to see if I could prevent that rate among our members or new business prospects. I developed a 30-hour program of instruction, 10 weeks at 3 hours per night. I then recruited a cadre of our outstanding chamber members to teach their segment at no cost. Each instructor taught their area of expertise. We covered basic business law, insurance, sales, marketing, credit cards, etc., giving them a very balanced overview of what they need to be aware of as a new business. I'll never forget one couple, in their early 40s, who had a photography business coming to me at the end of the course telling me that they would have given anything to have taken this course before they went into business. We did 3 10-week sessions a year and had over 700 grads during my tenure at the chamber. It was another program copied by other chambers. We charged $180 for the entire course, and I would also secure sponsors to help underwrite the expenses involved. We did not design this to be a big money maker, but we were profitable and helped hundreds of young businesses to survive. I was very fortunate to have on my chamber board a skilled and able attorney named Howard Ross, who soon became my 2 Dean 2 for the EA class. Howard attended and supervised 30 Wednesday night classes plus 3 graduations. Amazing commitment. I would later bring this program to Lake Sumter State College as their business assistance director. One of the things I really felt good about our 700 plus EA grads was that 53% were women and 33% were African American. Major League Baseball finally comes to St. Pete. After years of pursuing Major League Baseball and being left at the altar twice by the teams threatening to move to St. Pete, we finally landed our own team, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, later shortened to Tampa Bay Rays. However, in this process we lost the St. Louis Cardinals to Jupiter, FL for spring training. I had met my boyhood hero, Stan Musial, and years later I would receive a very meaningful memento from him. More later. Our leadership St. Pete program was the nation's second oldest program, and it was a gem among our chamber activities. We also had a dynamic women's council, and I also created the Tampa Bay Business Women's HOF 2 after seeing a void in the Bay Area for HOF recognition for successful business women. The existing Tampa Bay Business HOF event was almost totally dominated by male inductees, as they had a huge head start in the world of business. Probably one of the best ideas I came up with had to do with the chamber's rental office space downtown. We had a good location on the ground floor of a 3-story building. When Dave Feaster was my chair, we made an offer to the owner of our building to buy our space as a condo unit within the building. Fortunately, he agreed. I then proposed a plan to pay it off over 3 years from donated monies from the membership. We also bought the naming rights to the building as a whole, so it was the Chamber of Commerce building. Once the space was paid for, we could pocket much of our rental monies to be used for chamber programs. I set up a retirement program for staff. As we continued to grow, there was a small travel center next to us that moved. We bought that space for I think $90,000 and rented it out to the downtown partnership until we had a need for it. Since we worked closely with the partnership, it was a Logical tenant. The value of our property ownership now was right at $1 million in equity. Quite an accomplishment. I happened to be in that adjacent travel agency, the morning of 9/11. When we saw the first airplane hit one of the Twin Towers, I immediately thought of the US bomber that accidentally flew into the Empire State Building. But as soon as the second plane hit the second tower, I knew it was a terrorist attack. We were glued to that TV for much of the working days as other events unfolded. Several days after the attack, I wrote the presidents of our airline's members and told them, based on the great harm to our airline industry, that we, the chamber, would waive their membership fee for the coming year. Within a week, I received a beautiful thank you note from Colleen Barrett, CEO of SW Airlines, thanking me. More later. I heard from American Airlines months later, but no one else. The year 2001 was the 100th anniversary of the STP chamber. We did a time capsule to be opened in 100 years, 2111. Don't know why I did not do a 25 or 50 year capsule. Guess I'm a real forward thinker. If any future reader of this history is around in 2111, check on its opening. Among the inclusions in the time capsule was a beautiful coffee table book we produced on St. Pete and Pinellas County. Ruth Bross, on our staff, was a gifted writer, and she wrote most of the text and I selected most of the pictures and mapped out how we should structure the book. It turned out great, and was a far better book than my first one for Fresno. Also, a nice profit piece for us. Ruth finished this a year or two before she died. She was so proud of the book, as was her family. She was very gifted. We did flirt with buying another building owned by Florida Power near the old YMCA that would have really provided for our needs for the rest of 2000 and beyond. We had a buyer for our building, paying our asking price, but at the last moment there was an issue with getting a clear title on the building we were buying, and it cost us our buyer. Disappointing at the time, but as events unfolded after I left the chamber, it was probably a blessing it fell through. I had a really good streak of outstanding chamber chairs. Probably only had one weak chair. One of the really exciting developments that helped jumpstart the revitalization of downtown was the construction of Baywalk, directly across from the chamber building. It was an attractive square block of shops and a 16-screen movie theater that became an immediate hit. It drew great crowds to downtown every evening. Along with Baywalk, some new high-rise condos rose facing the bay and the pier that now brought to downtown the activity of daily residents. St. Pete was coming alive to the point that the leadership of Tampa came across the bay to see what we were up to. Housing-wise, we had moved from Bardmore to the bay. We bought a house on the water at the end of 31st St. South. Had a 120 dock, pool, and looked directly out at the Skyway Bridge. We were the end house on a cul-de-sac. The home needed a new seawall, which the seller replaced before we closed. About a month after we moved in, a major storm hit us, took all the boards off our 120 dock and dumped a ton or more of seaweed over our new seawall into our pool. What a mess. The home had not been well maintained, and we spent 2 years really shaping it up, inside and out, including rebuilding the dock. As beautiful as the house turned out, we got tired of sweating out every tropical storm that formed. Of the coast of FL. I had always wanted to live on the water, but decided that a big lake was preferable over that awesome ocean. We had bought the empty lot adjacent to us, so we had a lot of room, a great dock, and a totally renovated waterfront home. But, one Sunday we went for a drive and found an area called Barkley Estates in North St. Pete, about 15 to 20 minutes from my office. There was a home for sale by owner, and it was the home of the developer, Mr. Barkley. Corner home, 4 bed. Room, 3 bath, game room, family room, formal dining RM, formal living room, big pantry, and large double car garage. Well landscaped lot. Pool with cage. We bought it. This was more home than we needed, but it was too good a buy to turn down. During our time in Barkley, Peg was a volunteer at the SPCA and walked a lot of dogs and really became adept in handling and evaluating dogs and cats for adoption. She was so capable that in 2003 she was selected as Volunteer of the Year. One day she came home to tell me about a dog she wanted to adopt. A retired greyhound. She took me to see him at the SPCA and he was a beauty. Fawn-colored and about 70 pounds. Peg wanted to adopt him Harry, but a couple had also wanted to adopt him but needed the okay from their condo association. They had till 5 p.m. to adopt him. When 5 o'clock came and they didn't show, we got him. What a really great dog. Raced in FL and had won several races. He was also cat-friendly, which was essential as we had a female cat, Tiger, named by me as she had a big black M on her forehead, Missouri Tigers. She met Harry at our front door when Peg brought him home and she bowed up, big time, hissed and let him know she was boss. After that they got along great. She would walk right over his head when he was laying on the rug. In December 2005 at the USFST Pete Campus graduation ceremonies, I was very honored to receive the President's Award from Dr. Judy Jens-Haft, President of the University of South Florida. This is the highest non-academic award that the USF President could bestow. The Chamber had been a big help to the USF campus in St. Pete. USF is the 10th largest university in America. Usually this kind of recognition goes to someone who has made a large financial commitment to a university or to an elected official who had a direct impact on the university. Mine apparently was earned via sweat equity of Chamber support of USFST. Pete. During my 11-year tenure as president of the St. Pete Chamber, I was very involved with the Florida Association of Chamber Professionals and was elected the state chairman for the year 2002-03. I had received the same honor in Indiana for 1994-95 and we had a very dynamic state chamber group at the time, in both states. I had planned to retire from the chamber at the end of my contract in 2006. In anticipation of retirement, Peg and I sold our home in Barclay Estates and downsized our housing needs. We went on a drive to Sun City Center, a retirement community of 55 plus south of the Skyway Bridge, and found a home for sale in Sun City Center. We bought it and had several sales, estate sale, garage sale, in shedding a lot of the stuff we had collected over our marriage. We sold over 40 clocks and several large pieces of furniture plus a whole bunch more. When we sold the Barclay home, we also included the pool table and my mom's 100-year-old baby grand piano, as the new owner played the piano as did his dad in honky-tonks. The irony of this was that the piano had a tonk bench which may have been worth more than the piano. Honky tonk came from the tonk bench which allowed the piano player to slide back and forth on the bench to play honky tonk music. We went from a home of 3,300 sq to 1,850 sq. We did a lot of work on the Sun City home and really customized it to our taste. We hired a Polish immigrant named Stanley, but his last name looked like an I chart with few vowels. He spoke English with great difficulty, but he was the best, most honest worker we ever had. Often when we paid him, he would say, "Tumak." We had used Stanley and his wife to do work for us at our Barclay home and they were a remarkable couple. Later on, one night my wife got a call from Stanley and his first words were, "This is Stanley, I citizen." How proud he was to now be a citizen of the US. We were so proud of him. He was exactly the kind of immigrant that should be coming to America. The drive to work, over the Skyway Bridge, was about 30 minutes, but a beautiful commute. We thought at the time that this would likely be our last home. But a surprise event would occur, which thrust me on a new path.